Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of GBB Live. You might be confused because you're not hearing Joe Molinax. He is currently on paternity leave as he and his wife will be having their third child, a third baby girl. So thoughts and prayers over to the Molinax family and just best of luck. And it's a really exciting time for him and his family. Follow him on Twitter at Joe Molinax. And this is a podcast on the GBB Podcast Network alongside the Core 4, 3&D Podcast, and the Starting 5 Podcast. Make sure you're liking, subscribing, downloading, wherever you need to do on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Megaphone, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcast. And Grizzly Bear Blues is a blog under SB Nation. Find it on the web at grizzlybearblues.com or on Twitter at SB and Grizzlies. I'm your host, Parker Fleming, and with me today is a columnist from the Daily Memphian. He is the host of the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 ESPN every weekday morning from 9 to 11. It is none other than Jeff Calkins. Jeff, how are you doing, sir?
Well, Parker, I'm happy to be on with you. And we were just discussing before this thing began that we know each other, not just because we both follow the Grizzlies, but because once upon a time, I wrote about you in a column back when I was the columnist at the Commercial Appeal. Is that right?
That is right. Yeah, Jeff wrote a column on me after.
Was it all on you or was it on the game? So this, I think I just went to the game and you were part of
the two
players who beat the ribs in the 2-on-cue challenge. And as I recall, you bombed in a couple of three-pointers to emerge with the victory.
Yes, sir. Yeah, me and my family friend Ben Hubbard did that. He's not much of the athletic type, so he just gave me the basketball, really, and let me shoot. But I think it was one of those, the Grizzlies were in the middle of some slump.
Right. So I said they should have put Parker Fleming in there or something like that. I used the 2-on-cue exhibition as a way of suggesting some roster additions changes or something.
Maybe. Yeah. I just know that it was a very injury mirage time and the Grizzlies were slumping a little bit. So I think I was just as a nice little lead in, but nonetheless, it was very cool honor. I posted on Twitter for our GBB live poll that I've been reading Jeff's work ever since I was about like 7 years old when I started watching basketball. So it's really cool just how life just comes around full circle, you know?
Well, it's funny because in the end, I got into this business because when I was in Buffalo, I was growing up in Buffalo and there was a columnist named Larry Felser. And I would read Larry Felser every morning. And you sort of don't think you're going to grow up to be Larry Felser, or, you know, you certainly don't think you're going to grow up to be someone who someone has been reading since they were seven, who is now a full grown adult. You know, it does make you begin to feel a little bit ancient, but it's one of the fun things of having had this job is that there is this really strong sense of place in Memphis, and people cared about the Commercial Appeal back when it was the big legacy paper. And, and you even see it now, like as soon as you join this community, whether I look at Daniel Lerner and Drew Hill at the Daily Memphian, And, you know, they're both in their 20s, young 20s. But as soon as you join the media community here, you're part of a larger community. And Memphis has a real relationship with the people who write and talk about the sports teams they love. And it's one have been one of the real pleasures of having this job for so long.
Absolutely, for sure. It's just a very unique community because, I mean, the media, I've gotten to connect with people that I've been following for a very long time, and even like names that you mentioned, like Drew Hill, who have kind of joined in the Memphis media ranks, but also too, the organization does a fairly good job of fostering a good relationship with the media, whether it's the players or coaches or PR. It's just a very fun experience. I always kind of just like calling it like my night job. It makes the night job very fun. But one of the columns that you wrote this week was about your experience dealing with COVID over the past 2 weeks. And it was a very good column. And I know I mentioned this to you prior to the show, is it's a very anxious time. I dealt with it and my family dealt with it over the past several weeks. And it's just a very stressful time. And just, you know, with your experience dealing with COVID and all the postponements going on with the Memphis Grizzlies right now, does having it change your perception of the season a little bit?
Oh, I don't know that having it changes a little bit. It doesn't really even change my perception of COVID. I learned some things about, because I had it, that I didn't know before. I learned how unbelievably easy it is to get tested, how it's pain-free, expense-free, no lines, you know, just a breeze. I learned about this thing called the monoclonal antibody infusion, which I got, which really I think helped me and is one of the reasons that I didn't have a severe case. I interacted with the medical people and I even a deeper appreciation for the work that they do. But in terms of how it intersects with the Grizzlies, it really hasn't changed it at all. I think it's a weird time to be a sports fan because sports just matters less. You know, if you go at the Daily Memphian, we keep track of how many, you know, we know how many people read things and how many people, whatever, same thing with the, you know, and it used to be that the most read things at the Daily Memphian every day, generally speaking, were sports stories, whether they were about the Grizzlies, Chris Harrington stuff on the Grizzlies, or Drew's or mine or whatever, whether they was about the Tigers and Penny Hardaway or whatever, that would always be the most consistently the most read stuff. And it's just not anymore, you know, and it's because people are much more apt to read about the vaccination, you know, ridiculousness going over at the Pipkin building and how the lines are hours and hours and hours long and people are being turned away. People are thinking much more about vaccine and COVID and politics and all of that. And sports has, I think, to some extent, receded in the importance for people. And so it's been an odd time. And I'm just grateful. I am grateful that we have games at all. And hopefully as the season progresses, we will have fewer delays. But I'm to the point, like where the Grizzlies are on this, you know, ridiculous break right now, I'm not angry about it. If I was going to be about angry about things, I wouldn't waste it on being angry that the Grizzlies haven't been able to play for X amount of time. I would be angry about, you know, whatever, people dying, or I'd be angry about, you know, people missing, being out of school for all these years, you know, this year, or I'd be angry about, or personally, I could be angry because I had, you know, a kid graduated from college and a kid graduated from high school and another kid is having a freshman year in college and they're not anything like, there's a lot of things you can be wrought up about and none of them for me really involve the Grizzlies. I'm just grateful that we get to see them at all and that we get to continue to build with this, you know, really young and exciting team.
Absolutely, for sure. And That it's exactly something that I've discussed on podcasts or in conversations with friends, is it's very tough to, you know, generate anger or frustration towards the Memphis Grizzlies or towards the NBA, because if we're being completely honest, there's no handbook of dealing with sports or running a season in a pandemic. We've seen all these different rule changes over the past several weeks with the NBA because all of us are learning on the fly. And even the NBA, we just saw it with the NFL. We just saw it with the MLB. The MLB had somebody celebrating in their World Series celebration who had tested positive for COVID like that night or the very next day. So it's just it's a very weird time. And, you know, sports aren't everything right now. And I've kind of noticed that, you know, with, you know, the political climate in today's world or just the world's climate today in general with social issues and health issues. It's just a very weird time to not only be a sports fan, but just cover sports right now. But, you know, there's that silver lining that you had just said is we're just getting to look forward to a nice young up and coming team that's exceeding expectations. I mean, I would have never thought that if you told me in the summer of 2019 that the Grizzlies would be in the thick of things for a playoff race in year two, the year rebuild, I would be quite surprised, but here we are. And one of the biggest questions that people have asked, I guess, because we're all bored and need stuff to talk about with the Grizzlies, is what's going to happen with the rotation. And I do want to get to the question of the day first. Thank you for the 52 users that voted on this. We're going to have Justice Winslow and Jaren Jackson Jr. back at some point. The silver lining, I guess, with the postponement was you're playing fewer games without Jaren Jackson Jr. and Justice Winslow. However way you want to spin it, that's the silver lining of things. So, Jeff, as Justice Winslow is returning and once he's healthy, what is the ideal use of Justice Winslow? Should it be a starter or a sixth man or a reserve?
Well, I mean, I think ultimately you invested in him thinking he could be a starter. And I think you would like to see, first of all, you'd like to see that he exists as an actual live human being and dressed in a Grizzlies uniform. And I think we're getting to a point where this mystery is truly disconcerting. And, you know, in the end, like, the way that Zach Kleiman described it was he said that Justice Winslow would play early in the season, but that Jaren Jackson Jr. would be a minute. Mm-hmm. So that suggests that early is earlier than a minute, and a minute is sort of later in the season. But here we are. I don't know when it ceases to be early in the season, I'll be honest. I don't know that it even now really qualifies as early in the season. But I think the goal is ultimately to see whether he can be your starting small forward. But I don't think you have to thrust him in that role instantly. And I will tell you, I don't get sort of, for example, I mean, I've observed from afar as people argue about whether Desmond Bane should start or not start. I really am to the point with this team that I don't particularly care as long as he's getting minutes, right? Why does it particularly matter? I don't think it particularly matters. And so I haven't been campaigning for Desmond Bane to start. And I, at this point, if Justice Winslow had been healthy at the start of the season, I imagine they would have started him as the, you know, starting small forward. But given that he will be picking up the season on the fly, I expect that he will start by coming off the bench. And, but like, when is he coming back relative to when Jaren Jackson Jr. is coming back? I don't think we even know that anymore. We thought it was going to be a Justice first and then Jaren Jackson Jr., but we don't really know. And so, you know, so much of this is fitting pieces together. But ultimately, I think the Grizzlies, they did what they did and invested what they invested because they want him to be your starting small forward.
Absolutely, yeah. And let's be real. Justice Winslow is almost everything you've been searching for since the Grizzlies traded away Rudy Gay in 2014. We saw it, but the Grizzlies have been trying this literally ever since they traded
that. Honestly, I think a healthy Chandler Parsons is more of what you were looking for, right? Mm-hmm. Because Justice Winslow isn't a shooter, not a pure shooter. That's, you know, and so, but he's a lot of the things you're looking for, right? I mean, he's, and I think I think in our imagination, because we haven't seen him, he's even more. We just think of we think of what he was supposed to be coming out of college, and we think of the upside. The truth of the matter is as an actual player, he hasn't been particularly more effective than Kyle Anderson over the course of his career. But he is a lot of the things. He can guard, he can create, he can shoot, but he's not a knockdown shooter. And in the end, he's also only under contract, you know, for this year. So you have to see him, because you've got to decide whether you're going to exercise the team option to keep him for whatever, I think it is $13 million heading into next year. So I do think there is some impatience, and I think it's justifiable impatience on part of the fan base to see what they have in him.
Yeah, for sure. Because I mean, there were a lot of opportunity cost with Justice Winslow. The Grizzlies basically punted on free agency last offseason because they didn't go after, or because they traded for Justice Winslow. And I know, like, you've had these emergences from that free agent class, like a Jeremy Grant or Christian Wood or Malik Beasley, players like that. So, I mean, there's obviously frustration with that. And I did a little bit of a deep dive on cleaning the glass analytics tool over what would be the cap space that you can open up if you didn't exercise that team option and you just renounced his bird rights, and they could open up $25 million in cap space and retool around that however way they want to. So yeah, there is that little bit of frustration because you want to see what he can be, because, you know, he's kind of the embodiment of what Coach Jenkins is trying to build within this Memphis Grizzlies culture of having multiple playmakers on the floor that could defend multiple positions and get out and run, play in pace, and also too, just a good culture guy. We've already seen that on social media with Jaren Jackson Jr. and Brandon Clark. When he's on the bench with the team, it's looking like he's gelling. I mean, you saw Ja Morant and him taunt DeAndre Jordan after getting dunked on by DeAnthony Melton. That melted a lot of hearts of G&G fans, including mine. But it's just going to be very interesting, because I know you mentioned too Kyle Anderson. And let's be real, Kyle Anderson hasn't done anything to justify not starting either. So
that's absolutely true. Like, he's been, yeah. I agree completely. I mean, Kyle Anderson has been one of the happy surprises. Now, obviously, he's played as many minutes as he has because of, you know, who's missing. He's such a jack of all trades. He can, you know, you've had problems at the point guard, you've had an issue injury, so he can help you at the point guard. You've had problems at the four. I think he's probably best at the four, or depth issue, you know, somebody obviously missing Jaren Jackson Jr. So what it'll be like, that's an interesting one. What will his role be when and if this team returns to full health is part of the mystery. And then the other thing is, obviously, is they have a lot of wings. And there's not clear separation with the wings. And so, you know, they don't have a lot of great wings, but they have promising wings or interesting wings. And so then how you sort that out, both over the short and long term, seems to me to be one of the fun things when you start thinking about the roster, who's going to be here and who is not.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And I think one of the biggest questions within that right now is that logjam within the backup two guard position, because it's a little weird, because right now it looks like Coach Jenkins' favorite is Grayson Allen. And I know Joe has kind of written on how he fits Grizzlies basketball and that he's going to shoot a lot of threes. He can put the ball on the floor and facilitate an offense a little bit. And he's not a great defender, but he's at least feisty and kind of cares on that end. But you also have Desmond Bain, who is shooting 49% from three, and that's been a sore spot for the Memphis Grizzlies forever. He's actually a guy that can fit into the plans long term next to John Jaren. And then also too, you have DeAnthony Melton, who they just put in a decent little financial investment on, who caught a DNP CD in the MLK game. So when it comes in, that 10th spot's going to come down to that two guard spot. Jeff, you're Taylor Jenkins right now. Who would you prefer to put in at that backup shooting guard role?
Well, to me, the interesting thing is like, what's the plan going forward, right? Whatever you think the goals of this season are, and obviously they want to win as many games as possible. They're not trying to shape anything around draft picks or anything else. But at the same time, the real goal of this franchise now, it seems to me, has to be sifting through all these pieces and seeing what they have. And to me, the most intriguing piece, and setting aside Dylan Brooks and what he's going to be for a minute, is Desmond Bane, because you have him, you know, Grayson Allen, I think two more years, like Grayson Allen, his contract is going to force a decision on him before we have to make a decision about, well, they have to make a decision about, for example, Desmond Bane. I just think So I think the most intriguing player there is Desmond Bane. And I don't think it's simply because he's the shiny new toy. I think it's because, as you suggest, he is. Grayson Allen is sometimes a shooter in theory, but he's not always a shooter in fact. He has a good-looking stroke, and you hope it'll be consistent, but it's not. I think, to me, over the long haul, you're looking at, you know, Desmond Bane is it seems to me, as more likely to be here 5 years from now than Grayson Allen, who I think is less likely to be here 5 years from now. But then the real question is are any of these players, including Dylan Brooks, a starting two on a really good team? Do you have right now anyone who either is or you can imagine developing into the starting two, or for that matter, the starting three? What's your answer to that, by the way? Who on this team could turn into the starting two or the starting three on a Western Conference Finals team?
When it comes to that question, I think the only player I can really make an argument for is Desmond Bane. And I know I'm like one of the bigger Dylan Brooks advocates on Grizzlies Twitter, me and 92.9's Connor Dunning. We like to call it Dylan Brooks Island. But I do think he's more of the six-man bucket-getter kind of player. And with his extension, he's nice trade fodder, because around the league, people see, oh, he's a 6'6 wing that can defend multiple positions and score at three levels. Let's see what we can get for this guy. He's the guy that you can realistically put in alongside probably Brandon Clark too. You could put him into a Zach LaVine or Bradley Beal trade if the opportunity presents itself. I don't think right now that's the starting two, or if Justice Winslow isn't healthy, I don't think the starting three guard or three spot.
The only person who you can really imagine being the starting three on this is Justice Winslow. Mm-hmm. And the only person I guess you can imagine Dylan Brooks, but I'm with you. I think he fits better as a sixth or seventh man. And so, you're just, you know, they have a lot of players who can grow up and become decent role players and rotation players, but they're still looking for really two-fifths of the rotation of the starting lineup, of a championship level starting lineup. It seems to me they're, you know, obviously with John Jaren, you have two of them filled, and you can imagine in Xavier Tillman that they may have someone who they could play alongside Jaren. You can, you know, if you sort of think optimistically about it.
Yeah,
but I think it's hard to say that they have either their two or their three long term.
Right. I actually do have kind of a thought here that it popped to my head when I saw Xavier Tillman play for the first time. And, you know, like traditionally, like your positions go like in height order or whatever. But I could see some sort of like kind of similar to that Pau Gasol, Lorenzen Wright thing going on with Jaren at the four and Tillman at the five. Do you see something like that too?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I think, I mean, yeah, and I, you know, whatever. It's easy to get excited about Xavier Tillman in these sort of limited, you know, minutes that we've seen so far. But he is, you know, he's a big dude mm-hmm. in a way that Jaren is not really he is a solid dude. And it seems to me it'll be one of the fun things to see. It's interesting to see all these games that have been postponed. One of the advantages is that there'll be more games played presumably when these, you know, just in terms of they can win more if they'll be healthier. But it's also, I want to see as many games as we can of the roster healthy, because then we get the answers to these questions you're asking about how do these things fit. And one of the things is really interesting is how are Jaren, when he's healthy, and Xavier Tillman going to fit together. And I think we will start to get a little bit of a sense of that if we can ever get them on the floor together this year. You'll have Xavier Tillman, who at that point will, you know, he's now gotten his feet wet. He can play reasonable minutes, and you'll have Jaren back healthy, and we'll see what that looks like. I think it looks promising. I can imagine it going forward, but that's one of the things that you'll sort of get to start to figure out here is whether those two fit together as well as you and I imagine that they might.
Absolutely, for sure. And so we're going to be right back for a quick ad break, and then we will catch you on the other side.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting... Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack-It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4/3/2023. Void where prohibited. Here's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at Frito-LaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
All right, so Jeff, you've been a columnist with the like Commercial Appeal, Daily Memphian, almost since the Grizzlies have been here, correct?
Oh, since before the Grizzlies were here. I came here in 96, and one of the really momentous sort of things I wrote about during this period was the fight to bring the Grizzlies here, which was colossal. And I was certainly here before they were here. There's no question about that.
Great, great. And so, you know, you've written a lot over the years. I remember, like I said, when I read your stuff, I can almost count on a Jeff Collins column every day. What would you say your favorite Grizzlies column was to write in these past 20 years of covering the Memphis Grizzlies?
Oh, that's impossible. My absolutely favorite Grizzlies column to write is impossible. There's been a lot. Like, I loved covering Hubie. I had a pretty good relationship with Dave Yeager, but I loved covering Hubie, and Hubie was grateful for the coverage, and yet I learned an incredible amount. So every day covering Hubie was a blast, right? That was fun. I loved covering the effort to bring the Grizzlies here. Like, literally, there was a moment when the county commission was voting on whether to fund FedEx Forum, and had they voted it down, the Grizzlies were not going to come. And the sentiment in the city and county, particularly in the county, was to not pay $250 million for an NBA team. I mean, it was wildly unpopular. And one of the county commissioners, as he cast his vote in favor of FedEx Forum, building FedEx Forum, said he made up his mind while reading my column that morning. Well, that's to have an impact on the city is incredibly gratifying. And so there's that kind of thing. I wrote a column when Grizz, and obviously, and I mean the dude in the costume, but they don't like to ever break persona, right? But I wrote a column about his fight with cancer. And that was really emotional. And so those are fun. I did a column once where I wound up, for reasons, complicated reasons, because of something the Grizzlies did, I ended up having to play Christmas carols on my tuba outside the pyramid before a Grizzlies game because of a column I'd written that was kind of hilarious. But it's for all of that, the most fun was covering the Grizzlies during the height of the Core Four era, when they changed the way the Memphians think about themselves in the city. Like, it was writing about Shane Battier hitting that shot to finally get a playoff win for the Grizzlies, and then driving to Houston because his baby was being delivered. And so he hits the shot, and then he has to get immediately in the car and drive to Houston and be with his wife, Heidi, as she's delivering her baby. And so that was incredible. Covering Zeebo during those years and Mark during those years and, you know, the going to the Western Conference Finals. Like, in the end, that was the most fun because you see what sports can do. It picks up the whole city and carries it along with it. And so that was probably the most fun I've had, was covering those teams and, you know, seeing everyone do the electric slide outside FedEx Forum after one of those nights. Like, it's just this whole city celebrating with these players. And that, to me, is the fun of it. And so to be able to chronicle that was probably as much fun as I ever had.
Absolutely. And even just being a part of all that, I mean, when I was growing up, like, I grew up on G&G Grizzlies in my middle school and high school years. And just being able to go down to games and really just, it was just a fun atmosphere to be a part of. It kind of reminds you of almost like the We Believe Warriors in a way, where it just kind of like united the city. And, you know, when you're leaving the games in the tunnels, I know you were going down for post game interviews, but you having everyone in the walkway yelling, "Let's go Grizzlies," and Zeebo, right, and all that. It was just so much fun. And then even, I started doing all this like towards the end of the Core Four, and right, you know, like, my first post game question was to Tony Allen. I asked him about the role he played in locking down Andrew Wiggins back when he was a big time scoring threat. He told me it was all Vince, and then he asked me like what my name was, where I was from, all that. So that was really cool, and then also too, like, I know how good of people like the Core Four guys are, and how they do in the community and stuff. And it was just a very special time to be a Memphis sports fan in general, because there was just this aura around the city that really just almost just made life like better, you know, kind of just like made you forget about everything for 2-3 hours and kind of just took you to a fun place. And I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. Maybe I would trade it for like a Sheen the Beat or whatever, but that's besides the point.
Yeah. No, it's been a blast. And it's been, and now what you can see is it's amazing how quickly they've gone from, you know, finally realizing they had to rebuild that team and turning it into, obviously with you know, getting lucky in the lottery helped immensely. But already turning it around and being able to point it back in the upward direction. And you can now imagine that someday there will be a ride that will be as fun as the last ride and could even go further.
Absolutely, for sure. And that's just a testament to the new front office and the regime that they did. Like, honestly, I never thought that the Grizzlies can turn Mike and Mark at their age into what they did. Granted, lottery luck helped, but also it paved the way for you to get guys like Brandon Clark, D'Anthony Melton, Grayson Allen, Desmond Bane, Xavier Tillman, among others. And Jeff, I do want to get you out on this. I mean, you've covered the team for about 20 years now. You've gotten to, you know, watch a whole lot of different players play. And, you know, I think the Core Four is really just kind of the pinnacle for most Grizzlies fans as far as their favorite players go. John, Jaren are inching their way up towards that top spot. Who would you say is the most underappreciated Grizzlies player in your mind in Grizzlies history?
Underappreciated in Grizzlies history. I mean, I guess James Posey, because he was so critical for the year where he was critical. Powell. I think Powell may be the most unappreciated. Powell may be the greatest Grizzly ever, and yet he's just not considered that because he didn't have the stuff around him that would have enabled him to, you know, to get playoff wins. I think that actually, now that I think about it, I think that's the clear answer. Pau Gasol is the least, is the most unappreciated Grizzly, the least appreciated Grizzly, because he may well be the greatest Grizzly. And he's certainly a Hall of Famer, unquestionably a Hall of Famer. But because, you know, he wasn't a tough guy. And then he carried that team to three straight playoffs that really had no business getting to three straight playoffs, an incredibly gifted player with a good heart and loved Memphis. And I don't think people, you know, I don't think they put him up along the side of the core four. And in some ways he was greater than any of them. So I think that's my answer.
Yeah, that's a very good answer. I remember doing a piece during the prime time of the quarantine where we just needed content to get by. And Pau Gasol, his all-star season ranked among the best, really, in franchise history. And I think the trade demand kind of clouded that a little bit because, you know, the team's never dealt with an all-star player wanting to get out of town. So I don't think none of us really knew how to deal with that. And then, granted, it worked out. He ended up in a situation where he got to win two rings and really experience that championship success that he much deserved. But also, too, you got Marc Gasol, who got into a situation where he can grow into an all-star, pretty much Hall of Fame caliber center. So I think I hit the nail on the head there with Pau Gasol. I really wanted to ask that because I feel like I get into a discussion like monthly about just how underappreciated Rudy Gay is because the Grizzlies have been searching for a big wing that can score at three levels since they traded him. So,
I am not a big Rudy fan.
I know he's very polarizing for sure. He's like, he was Dylan Brooks before Dylan Brooks, even though I don't know if Dylan Brooks is as good as Rudy, but same level of polarization per se. But Jeff, I want to thank you very much for coming on to this edition of GBB Live. Do you have anything you want to plug in before you before we get off?
No, I'm happy to be on. And subscribe to the Daily Memphian. No one writes. Chris Harrington is as good as there is writing about the Grizzlies. So subscribe to read Chris, among other things. He's doing something fun this week where he's been taking true or false questions on the Grizzlies, your hot takes from Grizzlies history, including was Mike Conley's season the greatest season ever by a Memphis Grizzly? He asked the question if the Grizzlies had drafted either Steph or James Harden, would they have won a title during that period? That and other true false questions. So I won't pimp me, but I will pimp Chris Harrington. You should read him at the Daily Memphian.
Absolutely. Yeah. All y'all should subscribe to the Daily Memphian. I know I do. You know, they have great coverage across the board. Like he said, with the Chris Harrington and his work with the Memphis Grizzlies and the uniqueness he brings to that. I submitted a true false thing too. I did mine a little off the wall with the bringing back Lance Stephenson after that 2016 season. Uh-huh. So I hope he answers that one. But I mean, even you have Chris, you have Jeff and the columns that he brings to the Daily Memphian. You have Drew Hill, Danielle with the Tigers, John Vardis covering high school sports. It's just very great coverage. I know it's also something I've turned to a lot, especially with the COVID and the accuracy of and the amount of information that they provide on that. So make sure you're subscribing there at the Daily Memphian. And make sure y'all are also reading Grizzly Bear Blues on the web at grizzlybearblues.com or on Twitter at SP and Grizzlies. Like and subscribe and download to the Grizzly Bear Blues podcast network. And make sure you're following the podcast on Twitter at GBB Live. And follow me on Twitter at Paca_Flocka. And that's it.